host Harlan Mono Logics. Number 00064. Recorded on January 31, 2024. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Worms of the Serpent. Worms of the Serpent. Chapter 64.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
And welcome to Post Harlan Mono Logics, the audio podcast. Now let me tell you a little Texas thing that you may not know. Texas, of course, by and large, is part of the great American Southwest. You can dispute that geographically. East Texas, more part of the Southeast. North Texas, where I am, more part of the plains and prairies. But if you just laid out states by region completely within their borders, Texas would fall into the Southwest. And with the Southwest, you've got this presence of lizards of all kinds, right? Lizards being typically a desert type of creature. Of course, they're not restricted to the desert. They are more warm climate creatures. You will find more reptilians and amphibians closer towards the equator as you move south in the northern hemisphere than you would up north, right? For example, growing up in New Jersey, as I did, and I always seem to mention here, it's just a stupid fact. It's my podcast, right? You didn't see lizards around. So for a Yankee, you know, like a lizard running up the wall is like, wow, that's a thing, you know? And it was something that I had to kind of get used to when I first got down south into Georgia, as it was back in that day. The only kind of lizard you really had around was a salamander down in the brook, right? Salamander down in the brook, it'd flip over a rock, salamander would come skittering out of it, you know, and that was about what you had as far as lizards were concerned up in that New York City metropolitan area, right? But down here, you got a variety of lizards. Of course, I've spoken at some length of the Texas spiny lizard that I captured. Captured is the wrong word for it. I rescued about a year ago, I guess it has been now, and nursed it back to life for 4 to 6 weeks in our house and set it off to the wild. Ain't seen it since. Don't know what happened. You know, I was hoping it would kind of start a population in my neighborhood, but no, that's not the case. I haven't seen another one since, so it probably didn't work out. But anyway, beside all that, so you got spiny lizards around here, right? The Texas spiny lizards. You got anoles, which are common throughout the entire South. They're different colors wherever you go. I've seen them in Georgia. I've seen them in Tennessee. I've seen them in Texas. I've seen a variety of colors of all of them. And then you got geckos, right? Geckos are also kind of common throughout the South. And we got a particular type of gecko here. It's actually not native, right? It's not native to North Texas, but it's the one that you see around here. It's kind of like this pale orange, like a pinkish orange. And geckos ain't the most handsome of reptiles. They're kind of funny looking, like their head's too big for their body, and they got those really padded big hands. They're funny looking, right? They're funny looking, but they're cool. They're lizards. Lizards are cool. I think lizards are cool. Do you think lizards are cool? I think lizards are cool. And they're not very big. They don't get very big. As adults, they may be, I don't know, 3-4 inches long. But you don't really see many adults around. Like, I'll see an odd one at the house every once in a while. Here at the job, though, right, we got a commercial building, commercial property, obviously. It's a place of business. We get these little baby ones, right, these little half-size geckos, these little half-size Mediterranean geckos. And they like to hang around, like, garbage cans, trash cans, recycled bins. For whatever reason, it's like they make this little blind alley where they hang out, and they wait for some kind of cricket or something to come wandering in and attack it, I guess. I don't know. But my job, Dwayne Schneider, Post Arlen, Texas, requires me to be moving these containers around all through the day. You know, now when the season is right, it'll be an everyday occurrence that I run into one of these baby geckos. In my mind, to try to save it from surely getting crushed by people or killed by a larger size spider than it is, you know, which we have around here, I'll put it outside. Right, I'll put it outside in the summertime where it's warm and everything. But they like to come on in. They get in under a doorway or something like that. I don't know their exact path. But we get these little baby geckos. And it's wintertime now. Now, it's like been nice this week, these past couple of days. We're at the, you know, we're in the last week of January. Our temperatures are between 60 and 70 in the daytime. It's been very pleasant out, you know. But last week it was cold. The week before that it was very cold. And nonetheless, I still run into one of these little geckos running around, right? The baby geckos. Now, what's really messed up is I believe I mentioned the prior episode, two prior episodes. I was sick twice in December, right? Respiratory virus the first week, and I had what I believe is COVID-23, right? The 2023 rendition of COVID the last week of December. But I'll tell you, that respiratory viral thing, they call it RSV or something like that, it never felt like it actually totally went away. It felt like I had that, and then COVID came, and I like kind of had both of them. I've just had this kind of puddling, little cooling drip at the edge of my sinus, at the beginning of the interior of my nasal cavity, that just never really would go away, right? And it would drip down into my throat, and I was kind of railing in my breathing at times where it pools up down there, and it was almost like a bronchitis. I haven't had bronchitis in a long time, like not since I quit smoking, which was more than 10 years ago. Which is good, which is groovy. You could keep that shit. I used to get it all the time when I was a smoker, but no, not since. But I remember what that was like. You take a breath in, and all that air is like riding up against all this mucus stuck to the walls of your lung passages, and it just makes that railing sound, that vibrating effect. And you know, the more air you draw, the more chunks of that mucus is likely to come off, come free, and then you got to gack it up and spit it out, right? I wasn't exactly having this great amount of pooling at the bottom of my throat from this very slow drip that never seemed to want to go away. But maybe after I slept a few hours or something, there was enough of it there, you know, gack up a little bit, and a little bit would come out. You're always talking about small quantities here. But again, like I was saying, it never seemed to go away. And then one day, sitting in my truck, virtually like right where I am right now, I was just kind of like laying back, listening to music on my break, and like I want to say that I gacked something up, but something gacked itself up. I was just laying there minding my own business, and all of a sudden something like crept up my throat and just demanded to be spit out. I don't know how to describe it otherwise. It was like a living thing. It was so weird. And I spit this thing out on the ground, right? Outside the truck. And it just laid out. And it just, you know what? It was just big hunk of slimy mucus that just lands on the ground. And it spread out in a formation that looked like a gecko, right? Maybe you call it a gecko. But it looked like, not exactly like a gecko. Right, it didn't have that pinkish, orangish, pale color that I was talking about. No, it had that pale greenish, pale yellowish kind of mucus color. It had the shape like a gecko, but it looked like a gecko that was already in the process of like breaking down. Like it got bit by a poisonous spider. And the venom of the spider was dissolving it, right? It looked like a semi-dissolved gecko laying on the ground. And it stayed there for like, 10 days? Rain and everything. It wasn't going nowhere. It must have been so highly proteined it dug into the concrete. Now it's finally gone, right? Between the baking sun and the rains and the winds and everything. But the imprint is still there, right? There's this, it looks like a wet spot with that same shape. It's just a little darker than all the concrete around it. Like if you can imagine, any people up north might get this, right? This was something we used to do when I was kids. We were kids, like around like 8, 9, 10 years old. Remember, it would be very cold up there. Right? It'd be very cold. We'd be just hanging around. That's what kids do. You get together in the neighborhood and you go looking for trouble. And what we used to do, if you had to take a piss, right, when it was really cold outside, you'd just stand in the middle of the street and you'd pull your willy out and you'd start pissing. And as you were pissing, you'd just spin around in a circle, right? And you'd make this piss donut on the ground. You following me, right? You're just drawing this big circle. And the more you had to piss, the thicker the circle would get as you spun round and round, right? When you were done, you had this circle, mostly perfect circle on the ground. And you know what? If your friends were with you and everything, you might have like the Olympic flag. You might have like five circles going, right? And those things would stay. Now, it would be very cold. Sub-freezing temperatures, you do this, they'll be there. And I'm not talking about in the form of ice, just the imprint of this, these circles of urine would stick around for like, I don't know, 4 to 6 weeks. If they were just, they wouldn't go away. They just wouldn't go away. So if you were somebody who did that, raise your hand. But now you know what I'm talking about. When I talk about this gecko that I hocked up right onto the parking lot at work here. And I call it the gecko December, right? The gecko December. Because when that thing came up, and like I said, it came up on its own. It up and crawled out of me and said, let me out. But once that thing was out, that virus was gone too. Any remnant of that finally went away. Strangest thing. I don't know what to say about that, how that is, right? Says the gecko December. It gacked up the whole month of the misery and poof, it was gone. Gotta figure that there's better things to talk about than the gecko December, right? You want to move away from this topic of conversation of a gack, right? But it only gets worse from here. That's just word gack. That's my word. That's a Maverick 88 dictionary word. Gack, I think if you looked it up in a dictionary, it either wouldn't be there or it means something completely different. To me, it's gack. It's carving lung meat off to hock up and spit away, right? The gack. Gacko December. But the word, it reminds me of the gugh. Gugh. It's that, all right. Going inner nerd on y'all again, right? Like the old days. Like the old days of post-Arlen monologics. When I did my deep dive into the universe of Star Trek, right? Star Trek. And in Star Trek, The Next Generation, with Worf the Klingon. You had the Klingon food, right? That was gag. I don't even know how to say it, right? Gag. G-A-G-H. And, you know, it was nasty. It was just to watch them eat it, you know. They're eating what at first glance looks like some kind of bloody meat. But what it really ends up being with a little intensive research is worms, right? They're worms in blood. And the worms are worms that came from serpents in the first place, right? So they're like the worms of serpents. And they're alive, and they require blood to survive, to stay alive. So they're like these blood-consuming worms that come out of serpents. And the food preparation involves pouring them into blood so they continue to live. And then you just stick your fingers in it, grab a handful, and eat it. And that's the Klingon food. Gag. Gah, I don't even know how to say it, right? G-A-G-H, right? And here we go with the blood, right? The blood, just the previous episode, talking about all the goth stuff, the vampire culture, the blood drinking, right? I start to think about Dracula, right? Count Dracula, and in general terms, what it represents. I would probably get kicked off the internet for expressing what I think about it, right? But, you know, speaking of drinking blood, there's the bloody drink, right? The Bloody Mary. Bloody Mary. And I tell you, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I drank my ass off when I was a drinker. And I'd like to be able to tell you I drank everything there was to drink, but I did not. I was not a mixed drink kind of guy. I do not think that I ever had a Bloody Mary. I could be wrong, but I don't recall it. If I had one, I had one. You know what I mean? Just one. I didn't just sit there and like drink them all night till I was shit-faced. I don't think that's the kind of drink that you would do that with. And again, mixed drinks generally are not. They're not getting drunk. So this guy's about to back into me. Seems like every other time I sit parked in a lot, there's somebody doing a dick maneuver. Anyway, way off track, but that's life in the fast lane. The Bloody Mary cocktail, right? It's a, what's it? Basically a tomato juice with vodka. And it's got other stuff like Worcestershire sauce, right? Worcestershire sauce. How do you say that? I don't know. This is the episode where I don't know how to say half the stuff I'm talking about, right? Worcestershire sauce, I think, is how my mother taught me. Hot sauce, salt, pepper, maybe garlic. Something like that, right? Those kind of things go into it. It's a Bloody Mary. And I don't know the point or purpose of it all, but go for it. But there's such a drink. And, legend has it that it was named after Queen Mary of the First of England, right? Now, I'm not like all kinds of big on the English monarchy, right? The royalty, the royal family. I think that shit is stupid. I just don't get what the fascination is with these people. If you're English, you're from England, or you live in England currently, you know, you were born there and moved over here. I can kind of understand that's part of your culture and upbringing. But it's just like an ordinary American redneck in the South. Why the hell would a person like that, a person like me, have any interest in the royal family at all? It does not fascinate me at all, a bit. I don't get it. It's one of those things I don't get. So because I don't get it, I don't really pursue knowledge in it. I think my mind's got better things to pick through in this world. But I end up on this, right? I end up on this. There's Queen Mary the First of England, known also as Mary Tudor and as Bloody Mary, right, like the drink, by her Protestant opponents. She was the Queen of England and Ireland from July 1553, and Queen of Spain as the wife of King Philip. She is best known for vigorous attempt to reverse the English Reformation, which had begun during the reign of her father, King Henry VIII, right? Her attempt to restore the church, the property confiscated in the previous two reigns was largely thwarted by Parliament, but during her five-year reign, Mary had over 280 religious dissenters burned at the stake in the Marian persecutions. Okay, so what you had here was basically a bunch of Calvinists moving to take over the whole Christian religious scene of England and parts there about like the 1500s. And this here Queen Mary was all about restoring the Catholic Church, or the state church, as it was back then. And she put to death nearly 300 people, hence the name Bloody Mary, okay? So that's the basic history of the name of Bloody Mary. There was more to her life, more to her biography. I don't really care to get into it all. I'm only learning on the fly here. I'm only talking about the origins of the drink Bloody Mary as it relates to the legend of the origin of the name, right? Which turns out to be this Queen Mary First of England, who I couldn't give a shit about. Now, calling her Bloody Mary really doesn't have so much to do with blood spilt as with bodies fried, as was the way of things back then in the 1500s. Anything that seemed to be related to Calvinism, Reformation, people were just getting torqued up at the stake all the time. I should say torched up at the stake, right? Calvin did that to people. You know, enemies of his, light them on fire. And then what we had the witch trials in Salem, right? Those were a bunch of Calvinists that came over. Please don't get me started on a Calvinist, right? Before I even became Orthodox, I already had the Orthodox perspective on John Calvin and Calvinism and Calvinists. And it's funny, my priest goes off on this. Priests that I listen to on podcasts, which I will get into eventually around here, the Lord of Spirits podcast, they're always railing about Calvinists. And apparently Queen Mary the First did too, right? But she wasn't like quote unquote bloody. She just was more of a firebug, let's just put it that way, right? She put these people to the stake and burned them. What was bloody in royalty, in European royalty, on the other hand, and this is something I vaguely knew about, just going by these the phrase, like you heard, I mentioned before, Dracula, right? The vampire Dracula. So, you know, Count Dracula, it's a character derived off of Vlad the Impaler, I think of, what's it, Romania or Hungary, Transylvania, that area for sure, right? Somewhere in there. Vlad the Impaler, again, you know, using the stake, but instead of lighting people at the stake, just kind of sticking people and hanging them up there, right? But that was, you know, we regard historically as the quote-unquote real-life Dracula. But Dracula is actually a fictional character that's based in part off of Vlad the impaler, but is really a different thing, right? But now there's this other woman from generally the same basic part of Europe, as the case is, right? For whatever the reason is, known as the Countess Dracula, right? The Countess Dracula. The Countess Dracula, by name, is one Countess Elizabeth Bathory, Bathory, known as Countess Dracula, also referred to as the Blood Countess, right? See, look what I was saying. Queen Mary the First of England wasn't really so quote-unquote bloody. This woman, Elizabeth Bathory, the Blood Countess, is kind of bloody, right? And as her story goes, again, at that same period of time, 1500s into the early 1600s, right? She was a Hungarian noblewoman and the reputed serial killer of hundreds of young women at that time, 16th and 17th centuries, right? Stories of her sadism and brutality quickly became part of national folklore, her infamy earning her the nickname the Blood Countess or Countess Dracula, like I've already explained. Right? She was born into prominent nobility. At one point, more than 300 witnesses gave testimony against her. Victims, like I said, were mainly young girls. She tortured victims before killing them. She was rumored to have vampiric tendencies, right? Bathory was said to have enjoyed drinking the blood of virgins. Drinking the blood of virgins. Why? Let me tell you why. She believed that it would preserve her beauty and youthfulness, okay? I want you to stick that one in your craw. Bear that in mind, all right? She believed it would preserve her beauty and youthfulness. She was also, and this is the part that I knew about her, right? I didn't know so much about the drinking the blood part. This is the part that I heard when, years and years ago, right? She was also rumored, let me tell you why I know I heard this, because and if you go back into my episodes numbering in the 20s or somewhere like that, I had made snippets, chapters of a book that I was putting together. I was in the stages of character development back when I was living in Georgia, right? I don't know. I found some things on my old computer, like 5 or 6 text files that had what I had written, and that's at least some of it. There was a lot of stuff missing, actually, right? But I read them out loud in those episodes. They probably end up being the worst episodes that I've ever did as a result of it. A, because I'm just reading all this stuff. B, I was still in the period of dumping F-bombs all over the place, right? So it makes it very difficult to listen to. I couldn't listen back to it again. You'd have to be a fan of me and who the hell is, right? Except for my wife and my mother. Nobody, really. But I had those characters in development, and one character that I was developing that I could not find a text file on, and this is dating back to like 2006, 2007, right? Right before I came to Texas. I wasn't even Texas back then. I wasn't even a Texan. I was developing a character based off of this person, right? And it was somebody who demanded virgins, right? She was like some rich woman who just was playing everybody like puppets, manipulating everybody, completely narcissistic. And she was having them go out into the world and hunt down virgins and kidnap them and bring them back. And they would steal them and she would bathe in the blood, right? And this is this countess here. She was also rumored to bathe in the blood of her young victims. The story goes that she developed this penchant after slapping a female servant in rage and discovered her skin looked younger where the servant's blood had splashed on it. Right? But it's all about this self-preservation, right? It's messed up. Her story goes on, but that's the gist of what I wanted. She's actually was often compared to Vlad the Impaler, who I mentioned before also. Again, the similarities to some degree, at least where this took place. Hungary and Romania, Transylvanian Alps in between. These stories always seem to be taking place around there, right? Where vampires are concerned. But anyway, yeah, so that's some stuff you maybe never heard of, right? The Countess Dracula. And I think of these stories, right? It reminds me of the story I wrote on my own, or at least I was beginning to, characters that I was developing, right? Ideas that I had in my own head. But when you look at the reasons, right? You look at the reasons why this person was doing the things she did. And you're talking hundreds of people were killed to satisfy her narcissism, right? There's your reason. Narcissism, perpetuity, right? Seeking immortality. You've heard me rail about the idea of transhumanism before. That is a very popular thing in and amongst the globalist elite. And that's kind of what they're aiming for. You know, put their brain on a stick and tie some wire to it. Hook them up to a computer so they can live indefinitely. You know, as long as the power don't run out. This is the idea. This is the idea. You know? And, see, I think about that. And I start getting into it. I got to tell you, right? I got to tell you. Warn you up front. You notice about me if you notice about me, right? I like a good conspiracy theory. I do. And we've had some really real doozies in the past 10, 20 years. And a lot of them seem to have wheels. Now, when you go to look at some of the stuff that I may bring up, I may mention, you're going to see a whole lot of, oh, it's debunked. Bullshit, conspiracy theory, you know, you do your quote-unquote Google search, or well, I don't use Google, but use your internet querying tool of choice, right? Which we have as a culture come to call simply Googling, right? But whether it's Google or just about anything else, for whatever reason, the system is rigged, right? The perspective that you're going to get, all of the search results you're going to get on any of these given topics, these conspiracy theory things, are always going to make them conspiracy theories, make them debunked, make them silly and ridiculous. Because here's one conspiracy theory that all media is slanted and owned. You know, that there's a single small group of people that really control the flow of information. And, boy, is that a conspiracy theory or what? Hell, I was looking up information on some of these conspiracy theories that I got playing around in my head in relation to this bloody stuff and this narcissism and this perpetuity. That's a difficult word. I'm having trouble with words today. Figure it out. But even like one of the pages I came up with, it just became like this conspiracy general, a conspiracy theory thing in general. It wasn't about a particular a conspiracy theory, even though I was searching on a particular one, right? It was like WebMD results or something like that. And I got it. I kept it, I think. Let me dig this one up for you. And I hate wasting all your time digging things up and reading. If you could bear with me here just a moment. This is Medscape, right? This came up. I did a search on a specific conspiracy theory. A fairly contemporary one, you know, within the last 5-10 years. And, oh, what happened here? Well, the article went to hell. I have no idea where it went. I just had it. I clicked on it. There was a box saying that I needed to enter in or pay something. After I read the whole thing, it was just sitting here. And now I return to the search. It's completely gone. Now, I hate to tell you that I was... I hate to make it appear as though I was lying to you, but no. But here I have what I searched on was a specific conspiracy theory. What had came up, it was a Medscape page that wasn't directly correlated with the particular conspiracy theory I was searching for. I looked at it, and here's what it was telling me. Basically, the people who are into conspiracy theories are some kind of mentally ill, right? But it was debating the degree of the mental illness, like how far along the spectrum of mentally ill conspiracy theorists are. Technically, what they were saying in their version of what's technical, toying with these ideas in your head in and of itself isn't crazy, but it's when you start to follow through on it. For example, if there's a conspiracy theory involving, say, a politician, and you decide to take out your chainsaw, hunt that person down, and chop them into little pieces, right? Tear them up into hamburger meat. That's where you're mentally ill. So it's when you're acting out on these conspiracy theories as if they're conspiracy fact, and if the as if the facts warrant you to do something vigilante like that, right? But the way it's worded certainly makes even the thought, the contemplation of a conspiracy theory, like the gateway into mental illness. Right, once you start down that road, you're down that road. It's like smoking marijuana, and then next thing you know, you're doing cocaine and heroin, right? The gateway drug, well, this is your gateway into mental illness. When a conspiracy theory comes your way and you actually start scratching your chin and thinking about it, huh, that makes sense, right? Right then and there, you're crazy. You're some degree of crazy, and you're full on crazy if you act on it, right? So I'm thinking, because I've got a past that involved a little bit of personal craziness. I've got a past that involves a whole library of other crazy people. I am no stranger to crazy, right? I am no stranger to crazy at all. And first of all, let me just say, because I know crazy, I believe in crazy. And a lot of these conspiracy theories involves craziness. I know that human beings are capable of this shit, right? Actual mental illness. Start to look for the real signs, right? Don't think about, what's a guy from King of the Hill, of course, as we're talking about post-Arlen, from actual Arlen, Dale Gribble, right? He was the conspiracy theorist neighbor of Hank Hill with the aliens and all kinds of government stuff, and right, he was that quote-unquote conspiracy theory kook and the prepper, and this exact guy that the powers that be in the New World Order don't like, right? Don't like this, the independent-minded person who dares to ask questions, who dares to contemplate things. Oh, that's the bad guy, right? But that's what we're being told crazy looks like as this world transitions, right? You've heard of normalization, right? The new normal. As culture is making this shift, and I'll get into this, right? Right? Things that used to be normal and that become abnormal. Things that used to be abnormal become normal. So as the shift from the abnormal to normal is occurring, we are being told time and time again what the new abnormal is, and it always seems to begin with some kind of kook that believes some kind of conspiracy theory, right? So Dale Gribble, he's the poster boy for that whole thing. But is that really what mental illness looks like? If you take a step back and look at crazy as you know crazy in your life, what are the red flags? If you was in a bar, right, and you're looking to date somebody, you meet this woman, you buy her a drink, and you have a discussion, right? You start dating, What are the red flags that you look for that determine that the bitch is crazy? And I mean, for real, I don't mean to get into necessarily like real sociopathic type of crazy, just basic insanity, basic mental illness, right? Issues. Person's got some issues. There's some very high level, easily recognized signs that point to that. That has nothing to do with conspiracy theory contemplations, right? Actual mental illness, it's a person that has an inability to cope with life, right? Whatever. The basic terms of life, life's terms, like you're living life on life's terms, is you basically got to get up and do your part in the world. Whatever you believe, whatever you do in your spare time, you got to contribute. Right, you got to produce something in this world. So you get a job, right? So normal people have to get up, commute to a job. You get your money, you pay your bills, and you try to improve your situation as you go through life, right? You got life on life's terms. They're basically simple terms. They ain't great. We're all a bunch of I almost F-bombed, but I caught myself. You see that? Yeah, the last minute, I snatched that F right out of the midair. Pretty good, right? Getting better here. I interrupt my runaway train of thought, but we have these basic terms of life that a lot of people, really potentially anybody at a given point in their life, may have difficulty getting along with, right? I went through a period of life, two periods in my life, where I was kind of unemployable. I was having a basic inability to cope. I really just could not do what everybody else was doing. I hate to say that. I hate to have to admit it, but it's true. I'm giving you some of my credentials. When I'm talking about crazy and knowing crazy and understanding it, right? There's a lot of direct observation of people who had been near and dear to me. There was also my personal experience with this, right? But I went through two periods in my youngish adulthood, you know, early adulthood and kind of median adulthood, early 20s, and then again, I went through something in my late 30s, right? Or momentarily, I was just not unemployable. I had a basic inability to cope with the things that people are generally expected to do as adults, right? So that's one sign that you look for. If you got somebody that just can't hack, they're having issues, right? That's one sign. People who are given over to drugs, right? You don't like even drinking. Obviously, drinking to excess is regarded as a quote-unquote mental illness. I don't really look at it that way. I look at it as a moral conundrum. It's a moral problem for me. It could lead to mental illness. Usually does. These things are all tied together, you know. It's not an either or. They're not mutually exclusive. You probably are mentally ill when you have a drinking problem, but more than a drinking problem is a drug problem, right? You have issues with narcotics. That's the same thing at a different level in a different way. That really brings a whole lot more problems a lot quicker, right? But you'll see people in polite society having a casual drink and not being problematic about it. People who are into narcotics, it's almost always a problem situation. Almost always. Again, not always, not every moment, but every person involved with it, I think, is going to have their little problem somewhere on down the road if they keep with that stuff. Because it's very highly addictive, very quickly addictive. It very quickly controls a life, right? And then when your life gets spun out of your own ability to control yourself, you start to get yourself into an inability to, well, run your own course. And then eventually problem coping, like I was talking about before. Using a lot of verbiage here for no good reason. But look, if you're on drugs, you probably got issues, right? This woman that you're hitting on, if she's using drugs, she's probably got some problems. And all I'm talking about here is actual signs of mental illness, right? Not contemplating a conspiracy theory, not having a conversation about that with somebody. I'm saying that don't make you crazy. I'm saying this is the shit that is crazy. Inability to cope, right? To do what other people are required to do. That's part of civilization, right? Being given over to narcotics, or having alcohol problems, you know, you being a problem drinker. If you're taking psychiatric drugs, I mean, that's a dead giveaway that you have a psychiatric problem, right? That's, which is mental illness by definition in this world, right? So people who are, you know, going to quote unquote therapy, right? And they're taking antidepressants, you got a problem. That's crazy, right? That's crazy right there. And then you start to get into deeper moral questions, right? People who are given over to perversions and things like that, you know? Kiddie porn, homosexuality. The list goes on, and it gets grosser and grosser, you know? Bestiality, right? If you're given the perversion, you're crazy. Narcissism, I mentioned, with these people, you know, these women that want to retain their youthful beauty by drinking the blood and bathing in the blood of virgins, right? There's some narcissistic tendencies and all that. That's crazy. And of course, in general, if you're just given over to harm of other people, and destruction, well, not even of your own self, right? Self-harm is a term, right? If you're into destroying things, if you're into breaking things, abusing things, cutting things, slashing things, chopping things, burning things, you're crazy. That's what real crazy looks like. But if you're going to contemplate and research conspiracy theories, the powers that be would like you to be defined as the crazy one in all this mess, right? The world is weird. The world is weird. But I do like a good conspiracy theory, right? And I'm not crazy like I used to be crazy. I'm not crazy the way crazy people actually are. I'm long, long, long past all that, right? I'm morally bound. I'm clear of conscience because I don't do immoral things. I'm connected to God. I'm connected to the Creator of all things without any problem. It's a open flow of information. I got nothing to hide, right? Everything has been laid on the table and put in the past. A clear conscience. And of course, 35 years clean and sober, no drugs. That's sober judgment, right? That's exactly the things that mental health begins with. Sobriety and a clear conscience right there. So I have that. And it's very well established inside of me. It's become who I am. That's what I'm known for. I mentioned in the previous episode that AA slogan, that AA phrase, that AA concept is really a good word for it. A concept. Concept in AA, which goes, you're only as sick as your secrets, right? So there's different levels of sickness that a person can be. And that sickness, it's not puking. It's not throwing. It's not gacking sickness. It's mental illness, right? You're only as mentally ill as the secrets that you are maintaining. How do you maintain a secret? By stuffing it down in a hidden place and not exposing it to the light, not speaking it away to other people, not repenting of it and stopping that kind of behavior, right? The secrets that you build up and maintain, they have a way of perpetuating. They have a way of taking over your life and owning you. They have a way of causing you to tell lies that you have to remember and causing you all kinds of anguish and anxiety. Situations come up somebody asks you a question, and instead of it just being a question, it becomes this grave challenge, right? Oh, I know people who you can't have a conversation with without setting them off. They start to come off as like extremely hypersensitive. And then you got to wonder why. Well, what's the matter with this person? Why are they so sensitive? Well, it's because they're hiding shit. They're full of mystery. Remember I was talking about, if you listened to the previous episode, I was talking about women of mystique, right? The darkness. Why do they have that darkness? Why do they have that mystique? What's so attractive about that mystique? But it ends up being that this person's got full of secrets that they've got to hide. And they're taking advantage of your basic goodwill and good-heartedness. General goodness that cares for another person, right? And then they tear you all up. They destroy that goodness. They leave you standing there holding your heart in your hand in pieces. That mystique, that secret, man, that's sick. And I talked about that plenty, right? But like I said, I keep saying it. I like a good conspiracy theory. And, dialing it back now to all this blood stuff, right? This blood stuff, this blood, this virgin blood that, like, maintains your youth, right? When I read stories like that, when I contemplate the legend of a person like that, when I'm contemplating the development of a character in a novel that I was writing who is like that, it rings with contemporary conspiracy theories that abound here in the United States, right? This whole idea of a ruling class, right? The elite of our society who are Luciferian, Satan worshippers. They drink blood and sacrifice children, right? Right? You've heard that. The general idea of a ruling class that is Luciferian and engages in that kind of behavior, right? And then the exploits that are subsequential to that kind of image of a sector of our culture. Two of them come to mind right quick, right? And I got to say it. First of all, up in New York City, right, there was the, and I can't give you the blow-by-blow details, just the gist of it, right, but it's enough to get me going, and sadly, I can believe this is true, you know, I can believe it. I'm not saying it's absolutely true. I can believe it, though. I can believe it, and that's where we've come to as a society. This is bad. This is bad. Let me tell you, this is the Anthony Weiner laptop. Anthony Weiner was some kind of political figure, I think, in at the state level of New York, like a state rep or a state senator. I'm not exactly sure. Something like that. He was some kind of somebody in New York State. Was he married to or involved with somehow some woman who was very close to Hillary Clinton? And they found his computer, and on his hard drives, right, there was all these images and videos that caused, what was it, like a dozen police, New York City police officers to like throw up and have mental issues. And now like 9 of them are dead, or 10 of them out of 12 are dead already. With suicides and murders and all kinds of weird stuff. And, you know, that's the story. But some of the imagery, the words that leaked out about what these people witnessed on this hard drive was pictures of a known federal level politician out of Arkansas and New York. Who is known for like leaving a trail of murder and death behind her in her wake. There's actually a a list of dead people that exceeds 50. It might exceed 100 by now. Well, the visual involved the torture and abuse of a child, like a 3 or 4 year old kid or something like that, beating the living piss. It was two women beating the living piss out of this child, and then like cutting and ripping the kid's face right off, right? The skin of the face right off, and then wearing it around like a mask, drinking the blood, and all about this adrenochrome, right? Adrenochrome. This is the element in the blood that when you get somebody frightened, right, and freaking out, the adrenaline kicks in. And if you get the adrenaline in the blood and drink the blood, it's supposed to like make you high and keep you youthful, young looking, all this kind of stuff. I don't know how true any of that is, but I do believe that there's child trafficking going on in this world, that it's being conducted by, supervised by the elite of our society. It's an international worldwide trade. All kinds of people are involved with it at all different levels of life. It is highly illegal, but it is definitely permitted. It's one of those deals. And what do you do with children? What do you do with children that you traffic, all right? I've had to ask myself this question. You may have heard the story about how I saved my brother from being kidnapped when we were young, on walking home from school. First and second graders, right? If you ain't heard that story, I can't tell it right now. But my brother was snatched. The two of us ran. Two other of us ran up the street. And he was being kidnapped. And I chucked rocks until I hit the guy in the face. And my brother got free. And we all ran home, right? Terrible, terrible times. It's, you know, in and around Newark as it was back in the early 70s. I bring that up because why? Why would people kidnap kids? What becomes of the kids that are kidnapped? Well, one obvious thing is that they're brought into a home where you have a wedded couple or whatever, a couple that can't have children of their own for whatever reason. So they have to adopt, and then they want to have a particular kind of child. Like, for example, if you have a white couple, they want to have a white kid so the kid doesn't look like he's adopted, right? Black couple want a black kid so it doesn't look like they're adopted. But it may be hard to find, might not be readily available. Might be very expensive. This might be the cheap and easy way to do it. Hire somebody to kidnap somebody, you know, and then have, you know somebody in the county government that could fudge paperwork and birth certificates and shit like that. So that's one thing that you can do with a kidnapped child. Another one is hold them for ransom, right? Get ransom money out of wealthy people and return the kid. But then what else? Like body parts, right? You know that there's a whole industry of black market organ body parts. It's crazy. The very Orthodox Jews in and around New York City and New Jersey, they like to deal on that for whatever reason. There's all kinds of stories about people like that, you know, in the yarmulkes and the big black hats and the black shirts and coats and, or the white shirts and the black coats, whatever these guys dress, right? The Jew locks hanging down the side of their face, and they're into that whole organ dealing business. It exists, is my point, and we have like documented proof of its existence. So that's another thing that can be done. Child sacrifice, child exploitation, like sexual exploitation for perverts that like kids, right? What else do you do with a kid after that? None of these things are good, right? None of these things are good things. They're all bad. But some are worse than others, obviously. child trafficking exists in the world. These are like, what was that? Like five different avenues. And again, they're not mutually exclusive. You can run a kid through all of that stuff. And, or some of it, you know. It's terrible. That's what I say. It's a terrible thing that conspiracy theories like this are palpable. It's terrible that conspiracy theories like this are believable. But that's one of them, right? And they call that whole thing with the Anthony Weiner hard drive, frazzle drip. And I honestly don't know what that word is, frazzle drip. But related to all this, right, in the same kind of lines, directly on the lines of child sexploitation, right, the abuse of children, child molestation, pedophilia, call it what it is. It's the whole Pizzagate deal. Pizzagate, that's the comic ping pong pizzeria down in Washington, D.C. And it's all these emails flying back and forth that were, what, released. Some email server was accessed by, what was it, Seth Rich or somebody like that, who was involved with the Democrat National Committee and released some of these emails out to people. It involved, what, John Podesta, who is rumored to be like the secret father of Chester Bennington from Linkin Park, who was murdered because he was involved with like producing some kind of video, some kind of film on child trafficking. You know, you've heard all this stuff. You've heard this stuff from me, again, prior episodes, right? But it was a use of like all these food terminologies to describe certain kinds of children, right? Preferred types of children, you know? And they use pizza terminology. I want a pizza with cheese. Maybe that's like a white child. I want a pizza with cheese and pepperoni. And it means some other kind of child. Maybe it makes distinct certain ages, for example, right? They're using all these different kind of like pizzas that you can order to represent some kind of child that you are actually ordering up, right? So that was this whole Pizzagate thing, right? And you had the guy who, James Gordon Meek, he was the journalist, the reporter that was very adamant about this thing having had been debunked when it hadn't been debunked, right? He's just going around saying it was debunked, it was debunked, it was debunked when it really hadn't been. And then he got busted for kiddie porn and some other stuff like that. You can't make this shit up. And it makes it very hard to turn your head away from it, you know? It's like, hey, this has, what, wheels to it. It's got some wheels. And, oh, man, think about sick as your secrets. This world is crazy. This world is definitely messed up. And some of this shit, maybe all of this shit, who knows? Who really knows? You got to keep your head on a swivel. Get your morals in line. Get your conscience clear. Get sober, because it's going to be a rocky ride. A lot of this stuff is coming to a head in this election year.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Stalin Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Stalin Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at poststalin.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@poststalin.com.